The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want the good news, you want the bad news?
I don't like either one of those options.
Your words are super wise, man.
You are a prophet. You deserve a prophet.
You do whatever you want. Who am I to tell you what to do?
But you're a psychologist.
Well, I know less than you do.
You're making me a better parent and a better wife, and thank God you're on the radio.
What planet are you on? I don't buy any of that stuff.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
What are you talking about?
You make my afternoon really fun. Enjoy ya.
You're about the most exciting thing I have right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, your fitless expert. We do have an emergency fit line. Got a kid right in the middle of a temper meltdown. We have a line dedicated completely to that. Although... It is a soundproof line. We don't want to hear all of that background noise. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program The Doctor Is In. I want to thanks are in order, the pro-life folks of Plymouth, Michigan. What a nice bunch that was last night. Good food, good stuff. I went back through the buffet line three times because if you're gonna not charge as much, you gotta at least eat your money's worth. I pretended I was at Golden Corral. A couple of ladies gave me a dirty look. It was only after I pulled my chair up to the buffet line. I said, well, I'm getting tired of walking back and forth. Program here is The Doctor Is In. The number to get onto the program, 877-573-7825. Now, that's 10 digits, and that's hard for people to remember. Most people remember the 877 part, maybe even the 573 part. But then when they get to the 7825, they're thinking, what was that? Is that 772? What was that? What was those last four digits? So what we've done is we added something that I thought would decrease the confusion, but here I find out it has increased the confusion. 877-57 equal. Notice how I paused, so it is not 57 equals something. 877-57 equal, if you'd like to call to get onto the program. Question about life circumstances. Comment to help someone else. Some kind of good referral. Now, I can't confirm anything you say if I haven't read it or anything like that. However, many people give good guidance. I can't be aware of all of the virtually infinite directions people can go in their lives. And also, if you have a generic question, something that has to do with psychology as it interacts with life or faith, 877-57 equal. And as always, if you were on the program any time in the past many years that this program was on the air, you are first up. It's that simple, and we take your word for it. You shall Eric Dumont, the call screamer. Andrew Kruchek, producer man, and backup call screamer. They believe you. That's it. We do not vet our callers here, and you do not have to have a call pass to get on the air. 877-57 equal is the number. We've been told that because of the supply chain problems, more than hiccups, backups, that Christmas shopping, you better do it now. Well, my mom used to do it in September anyway. She always showed me underneath a bed and said, look, I've got the gifts for everybody. Mom, it's August 3rd. I know, I just wanted to beat the rush. So I just got a few suggestions here, ladies, if you're buying gifts for a guy, for your man. When in doubt, you don't know what to get him for Christmas, buy him a cordless drill. Doesn't matter if he already has one. I know a guy who owns 17, and he doesn't complain. You can never have too many cordless drills as a guy. Nobody knows why. If you can't afford a cordless drill, buy him anything with the word ratchet or socket in it. We guys love saying those words. Hey, can I borrow your ratchet? Sure. By the way, you through with my 3/8-inch socket yet? Again, nobody knows why. or label makers. Now, label makers are almost as good as cordless drills. Within a couple weeks throughout your house, there will be labels absolutely everywhere. Socks, shorts, cup saucers, door locks, sink. Nobody knows why. And remember this. Don't buy a guy anything that says some assembly required on the box. It will consume Christmas. And he will either have parts left over or not enough. Okie dokie, anything else? Rope! Men love rope. Must take us back to our cowboy origins, or at least the Boy Scouts. Nothing says love like 100 feet of 3/8-inch manila rope. Just a few suggestions. I'll run those by as we get closer to the holidays, although you may not be able to find any of that stuff on the shelves. Okay. I wrote a book back in 1990. The book was called Back to the Family. 1990. You do the math. It's 31 years ago. I was the only sixth grader. Only sixth grader who wrote a book. The premise of the book was we asked state teachers of the year in all 50 states, would you please direct us to families that you think are exceptional families? Because we want to ask them, how are they doing this? How are they making their family life so rewarding, so well? Given that you see their kids and you see the consistency of character and virtue among the kids. Got it. So we did. And what we found was that we found some expected findings, but we found some unexpected findings. For example, a significant percentage of our parents who were identified as among the best parents that a teacher had ever seen had ugly, chaotic, traumatic, abusive, alcohol-ridden, nasty childhoods. You've heard the hypotheses. You have a bad childhood, you're going to have a bad adulthood. You're going to think you're okay, but it's all just percolating down in there. And one day you're just going to torch the whole neighborhood and all of its garages. Well, that's not exactly what we found. We found that an awful lot of these parents rose above their own beginnings. How did they do this? Well, you're a religious person. You recognize that it's part of the guidance and the power of the Holy Spirit in their lives. But there was a phenomenon that I called reverse resolve in the book. A certain percentage of these parents knew what they grew up with. They knew how it affected them adversely. And they were determined that if they were ever parents, they would strongly, strongly resist what they learned, what they saw, what they experienced growing up. One son, very articulate young man, I think it was our interview in Chicago, he said something like this. My mother had no affection growing up. My mother is the most affectionate person I know. Then he said this. She had to teach herself to be affectionate. What a great line. She had to teach herself to be affectionate. She didn't have the model. Everything in her young life pointed in a different direction. She rose above it. I guess that's what I'd say to you. I know many people here listening look back on their own childhoods and, at the very least, they were turbulent. Some of them were pathological. And you're trying really hard to be good parents. And maybe there's a nagging doubt for you that says, can I do it? What if I fail? What if this stuff just keeps poking its head into my present? Take a lesson from these families. They went on to be, many of them, I'd say up 20% of them maybe, went on to be some of the best parents that a teacher had ever seen. The resiliency of the human spirit. It's very powerful. Do not become bogged down in the psychological dilemma and wondering of, what if I can't overcome all those years? You got God helping you out, you know. That's pretty potent force. And you have your own reverse resolve. I want to. And maybe you're more faithfully religious than anything you knew growing up. That's huge. That's a major factor. God bless you. Do not despair because you look back on your own childhood and you think, I'm stuck. I'm stuck where I was. No, you're not. Not at all. You have reverse resolve. You have the power of the Holy Spirit. You got God pushing you in a different direction. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number. I would love to talk to you. Thank you.
Now, wait a second. Let's talk this over. I'm not a rabbi for nothing, you know. I think I have a solution. Just wait a second.
Don't let everyone else get all the great advice.
Call now to speak with Dr. Ray.
Now, wait a second.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights. Beginning with the right to life, the government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
The EWTN home video highlight for October is They Might Be Saints, Father Michael McGivney. Miracle hunter Michael O'Neill follows the trail of Father Michael McGivney, founder of the Knights of Columbus and America's first parish priest to be beatified. This documentary explores the miraculous cure that led to Father McGivney's beatification. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Well, you've seen the sitcom series, very popular in the 90s. Everybody loves Raymond. This is my version of this. Some people sort of tolerate Raymond. I'm Raymond Grandy. I got a smile out of my friend Harold Ziegler. Good to have you with me. All right. We had a call. Now, God wires life backwards. He truly does, and he giggles. I can hear him giggling. When you were a preschooler, what were the two things you fought? You didn't want to go to bed. You didn't want to take a nap. And you didn't like to eat a lot. There were a lot of foods you wouldn't eat. Now, what do you want? You want to be able to take a nap whenever you want, sleep when you want, and you'd like to be able to eat whatever you want and not gain any weight. But you can't. So these preschoolers are going to have to live with the reality that they had a chance to eat and sleep as much as they want, and they let it slip by. Now, we got a call from a lady who said, my son is just, he's just not eating. And she was real nervous about that. And by the way, I made the observation that in 1880, when food was put in front of you, you ate it because you didn't have 7,265 options as a kid. And you said, I don't like that color. I don't like that color, and I don't like the way that tastes. No, we're going to have bread again? You ate what was there. So Margaret said, I got a suggestion, Dr. Ray, because you didn't say it. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Dr. Ray. This is what my husband did. When our daughters
were, you know, that age, and they didn't want to eat vegetables. My husband can make really good airplane noises. And he would say, open the hangar, here comes the airplane, and the spoonful.
Does that work with 12-year-olds?
Well, I don't know, but this was how he did it. First, he would make the sound of a World War I biplane putting along. That would go into the hangar. The second would be a World War II B-24 bomber. And then the third one would be an F-15 fighter plane zooming in. And so that was, you know, a very successful method in getting the vegetables into our daughters. Well, and of course, about 30 years later, our older daughter said, well, you know, I just kept on resisting eating vegetables because I had so much fun when Daddy made those airplane noises.
So she played her father. It's like, okay, Dad, keep doing it. Keep making the airplane noises. Yes, that is a common parental technique, Margaret, where it's the old choo-choo or a car. Now, what I did when I did that with my kids is I crashed. The spoon smacked into their chin because they didn't open their mouth. So I had to make crash noises. But your daughter must have been more of a sweetheart, less resistant than my children. I tried every plane I could think of. But anyway, that is good stuff. That's cute stuff. And the fact that he knew all those airplanes is a testament to his aeronautical knowledge. Margaret, thank you. That's so cute. Thank you, dear, for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, honey. Bye. Rose from Texas. Boy, don't you hate when this happens. Hi, Rose. How are you?
I'm good, Dr. Ray. Thank you for taking my call. It's very difficult for me to express this, but I'm from another country, and my parents came here legally, and my dad worked all the time, and my mom was left alone to raise 5 rambunctious kids in a country that she didn't know the language. And I would, every once in a while, they would have a big fight, and it was vague. But as I got older, my mom would state that my father was skirting around. And that was horrifying to me because my father was the kind one, the patient one, the sweet one, the one that would let us get away with anything. And my mom was the tyrant and unloving and very physically and verbally abusive. And as I got older, I had very many discussions or arguments with how mean my mother was and et cetera. And she would throw that my dad was not around and he wasn't very kind. But we always saw my dad as this saint. Years ago, I found out that my father was inappropriate with a niece of ours that they were taking care of. And my mom thinks it's a big secret. And my niece told me. At first, I didn't believe because I couldn't believe the character of my father would do that. And of course, they've hidden the secret, and they, you know, they think that I don't know the secret. And I'm going to be seeing my parents soon, and I have a real hard time now that I know the secret. I'm having a real hard time, and I can't say forgive him because it's not me that he violated. And my poor mother knows about it and has had very severe mental anguishes and depression and anxiety, and she's basically a recluse. And I feel sorry for her now because I know the anguish. She's very codependent on him. The anguish that he has brought to her through this behavior. And, of course, I've felt guilt for being very angry with her. And now she'll say, you know, I know I was a bad mother. I know I wasn't patient. I was mistreated and abused as a child and sexually too. And, you know, hearing those things are very hard for me as a grown woman to hear. how much pain my mother has been in and how much pain my father continues to bring to her, in a sense, because he's not very patient with her at times, with her, you know, forgetfulness or just, you know, her depression. And I think most of it was caused by his behavior. And I just have a lot of anguish about how I'm going to deal with him or treat him or see him. I mean, they're elderly. You know, they're in their 80s. He's in the 80s and she's in her late 70s.
Rose, so I have, what if you found a private time with your mom and said, Mom, I got to tell you, I didn't see all this then. I was a kid. I didn't even see it as a young adult. I know it now. And I just want to tell you, I'm sorry for not understanding. And I'm sorry for all the times that I blamed you for things that you shouldn't have been blamed for. Mom, I realize now that whatever struggles you were having were at least partly related to what Dad was doing. We didn't know that. He was very good at looking good. What if you approached it, Rose, from softening toward your mother as opposed to blasting your dad?
Well, I didn't want to blast my father. And I have told her pretty much that I don't blame her, and I knew the kind of home she was raised in, and I've given her that concession. But she thinks that I do not know about what my father did to my niece, and she wants to keep it a secret because she's afraid if I know, I would be the only child that would call the police on him. Of course, you know, the statute of limitations is gone, and the only one who could do that would be my niece. And so she's terrified that her rock, her whatever she calls him, will be gone and spend his last few years in jail. That's what she's afraid of.
Well,
and it's this secret that is eating her up.
Ask yourself, what purpose would it serve to now come out with it?
No, I guess it wouldn't be any good purpose.
You know, there are those listening right now, I'm sure, thinking, oh my gosh, he needs to be held accountable for what he did, and I don't care how long ago it was. Yeah, but if it was 50 years ago, and the niece and her family, for whatever their reasons, didn't approach it, and your mom is absolutely terrified in her 80s, and she's wrongly thinking this, but she believes it, which
right.
is if you find this out, there's a chance you're going to do something about it and it'll all blow sky high, and she can't imagine herself living without him. So that
right.
would turn her world upside down. I guess you got to ask yourself, what is the purpose of me doing this? Why? Is it to tell Dad, you didn't get away with it? You realize we know now. We know now what you were, what you did. You didn't get away with it. So don't think. I mean, I suppose that could be a temptation. But again, for your mom's sake, at her age and her insecurity, if you say, I'm going to bring this up, and who knows what reaction she's going to have.
Well, I'm not the confrontational person or type, and I just don't know how to interact with my father. No, I guess he doesn't know that I know. So it's just...
Interact with him, Rose, just as you always have. You don't know if he went to confession. You don't know if he's repented. You don't know any of that. You don't know the whatever contrition might be in his heart. You don't know that, okay? You don't know what mellowing took place as he got older. So at this point, you're going to assume that he's made it right with God. And if he didn't, if he's never been a religious man, you're going to hope and assume that he made it right with the niece and your mother.
Hello and welcome to The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes. If there's one doctrinal teaching of the Catholic Church that stands out particularly strong in this modern day and age, a teaching that everybody seems to know, both Catholics and non-Catholics alike, whether they agree with it or not, it's the teaching that priestly ordination is reserved to men alone. But this time-honored doctrine, held by the Church since the time of Christ and His apostles, in no way militates against the dignity of women, their natural gifts or vocation, nor is the fact that women are ineligible to receive the sacrament of holy orders to be viewed as a reflection against their universal call to holiness, to which all persons are called. In modern times, the Church has repeatedly and definitively reiterated the reasons why the sacrament of holy orders can be received only by men. Pope John Paul II, in his apostolic letter on reserving priestly ordination to men alone, quotes Pope Paul VI in stating some of these reasons, including the example recorded in the sacred scriptures of Christ choosing his apostles only from among men, the constant practice of the Church, which has imitated Christ in choosing only men, and her living teaching authority, which has consistently held that the exclusion of women from the priesthood is in accordance with God's plan for His Church. In actual fact, then, the Church concludes that she is not authorized to admit women to priestly ordination. In other words, the Church herself cannot change this teaching. She has not the authority to do so. And this is because the Church recognizes herself to be bound, as it were, by this choice made by the Lord Himself. A choice, mind you, which He made freely, since He shows Himself time and time again in the Gospels to not have been subject to the prevailing customs or social conditions of His time. This has been The Crux of the Matter, and I'm Father Wade Menezes. God bless you.
So much I wanted to talk about in our previous call with Rose there, because it brings up many issues. How do people live double lives? How do they appear one way, but in the darkness are quite another way? You don't want to be cynical. You don't want to think, well, yeah, but I wonder what you're hiding. You seem like an awful nice person, but who knows what kind of wretchedness resides in your soul. You don't want to be cynical like that, but I guess being a shrink for all these years, I've seen how, I don't want to say easy it is, maybe common? And that's not even a good word. It happens that people do live lives quite differently than what they appear. It happens. And the most perplexing thing to many people is, how can they do that? I'd be torn apart trying to live a life differently than what I appear. It'd kill me. Well, maybe that's a good reflection upon the quality of your character. But what happened with Rose is, you know, mom was the bad guy, dad was the good guy, and now she finds that was flipped on its head. Now, that didn't mean mom wasn't difficult. Mom could be difficult. Dad was not difficult. He just had character flaws in other directions. Michelle from Westboro, Massachusetts. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, doctor. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
So,
what's up?
I have a son who married a woman who already had a child. At the time, he was 7. He's now 8. We also have a 2-year-old that is now in the picture. But the problem is the 8-year-old, he does see his biological father. He still sees him, I think, on the weekends. And but he has a lot of, I want to say anger issues or something. He hits his mother. He's now hitting my ex-husband's mother because they live in the same house. My son feels so trapped because, you know, he feels like he can't do anything because he's not his, you know, child to really do anything to. They've taken, the school has complained that something needs to be done about him, but they take him into a therapist and they're telling him that you can't punish him, you can't take toys away from him, that's wrong to do, you need to let him kind of do what he wants. And my son is just, he's like, now he's hit him, you know, grandma, what do I don't know what to do anymore with him. Now, when he's with me,
your son can't do
and I
anymore.
Don't have him very often, he's fine.
Your son can't do anymore if his second partner doesn't allow it. Does she not allow him to discipline the boy?
Well, I think she has a hard time disciplining him as well. She has so many fears from... she has this fear that I think her father used to tell her that that she would get him taken away from her and so on and so forth. I said, that's ridiculous. You have to have boundaries. He has to have boundaries. And I just, I don't know. I guess I feel at a loss for what to tell him. Because I know that I said, well, have you put him in a room? I mean, if he doesn't have anything to play with and he's being punished, you know, you sit on your bed until you think about what you've done.
Michelle, you got two problems, dear. You got two problems.
Okay.
Actually, you got three. The first is you can't do anything about it. So that's that. That basically takes care of the other two. But the other two are this. If the therapist is telling them, really don't punish him, let him experience his emotions and act out, and they believe this therapist and they're following this therapist's advice, then they're not going to give you credibility over the therapist.
Right.
Three. Here is where I see people in my office in these situations. Constantly. You have a step-parent who looks at the situation more objectively and says, we got a problem here. This kid's out of control. You have the biological parent who feels guilty, who has fears, who's worried that the ex-spouse is going to sabotage and take the child away and become the good parent. And so as a result, they really don't do much in the way of child-rearing discipline. And the kid gets uglier
right.
and uglier and uglier. And it's just that's the trajectory that it goes. I guess what I would say to your son is that unless he can get on somewhat a page with his wife or the woman he's with that says, I am permitted to discipline this young man. He's just going to have to sit there and shut up because... all it's going to do is, until she is willing to give him some authority, all it will do is create problems between them. I've seen it happen
well,
all the time.
She does give him, she does allow him to step in. You know, obviously, it comes down to, you know, he can't spank him or anything like that. The problem is anything he tries, this has been multiple therapists now. It's not just one. I guess
that's no surprise. Individual therapy with behavior problem kids is very, very ineffective. Very.
Yeah.
You got to work with the parents.
Right.
Well, here's a couple of things. If she's going to allow him to have some authority, he's got to decide how he's going to do it. Now, here's what I think, and you're not saying this. Typically, when folks like this come into my office and the biological parent says, oh, no, I give the step-parent authority, it's usually up to a point. In other
right.
words, if I disagree with what he's going to do or she's going to do, then I'm going to stop him. And that creates real problems. So in other words, the step-parent says, yeah, I can try to discipline him, but I'm always second-guessed. And I'm always told that's too much, or I'm always told you can't do that. Now, is that happening?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's really happening. I just know that between him and the mother, they both have made comments that they just don't know what to do with him anymore because everybody keeps telling him, you can't do this, you can't do that, it's mean. Even her mom steps in and tells her, you can't take all his toys away, that's not nice, you can't do that.
Well, okay, what you're saying, Michelle, is they've got an awful lot of ideas that aren't working.
They do have a lot of people
giving
advice.
They've got a ton
advice.
Of ideas that are making everything blow up. And the sad thing of it is the child is going to be the victim of this. The child is going to be the one who's already not liked at school. The child is going to be the one who's not going to get along with people. The child's going to be the one who's going to crash up against everybody. And unless they get to a point where they are willing to alter their parenting in a much, much better direction for the sake of this young man, it's just going to continue. I would suggest, I have a book called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is my most popular discipline book. It puts parents in charge. It deals with all kinds of behavior problems, all kinds of strategies, hundreds of strategies in that book. Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It's my most popular parenting book. It is on my website bookstore, along with a whole bunch of other discipline books.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John, chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets. All the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets, who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band. And I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child. But I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Garandi, program doctor, is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Good Lord permitting, tomorrow, heading up to Brighton, Michigan. Holy Spirit. They're having Mass at 6:15, then they're going to let me talk at 7. Brighton, Michigan. Tomorrow, you want to go? Show up. Love to see you. Tori from Ohio, looking for a recommendation. I got to get some details on Tori's question here. Tori, what kind of eating disorder?
Hello. Bulimia.
Is this you or someone you know?
This is me.
Okay. Now, is the bulimia involved with bouts of anorexia or purging?
Purging.
Okay. Now, you want to fast for religious reasons, or you don't want to fast for religious reasons?
Well, I would like to. I believe the scripture when it, you know, when Jesus said some demons can only be driven out by prayer and fasting, and I would like to in some way participate in fasting for the church, for example, during Lent, or at other times when there seems to be a need. For that type of sacrifice in my life, but I'm really, really worried about food restriction. So I was calling to find out other ways that one could fast, if not from food. I think I've read some things before where somebody might suggest, oh, I'm going to pray, I'm going to fast from using profanity today. But that seems to make it then about me rather than about the intention I'm fasting for. Does that make sense?
Oh, I don't think that follows. If you're saying I'm going to fast from something that has plagued me as a bad habit or as a sin, and I'm going to mm-hmm. use that as a little more impetus, some oomph
right.
to not do that, and this is the reason I'm intending this, I think that's a beautiful thing. A lot of people fast from media, video stuff, computer, mm-hmm. smartphones, social media. They don't pass for me. I've been given as penance. When somebody really goes into confession and is really bad, then the priest says, then you have to listen to his show 3 days in a row, and then they scream, and it's bad. It's really bad.
Can't you
give me something else, like walking on broken glass or something like that? So, first of all, I think the church would not, in a discipline, say, Tori, you have to fast anyway, even though you've had a history of eating problems. They wouldn't say that. They would recognize mm-hmm. that this would probably be a legitimate reason, for example, not to fast on those days of obligation. You can talk to your priest about this, but I would okay. bet that's the direction. On the other hand, the bulimia is, okay, binge eating. And if you would fast, let's say, in between meals on Good Friday, would that kick off some kind of binge eating at midnight on Saturday?
No. Oh. No. Typically, no. Mm-mm. It's, say, where I've struggled in the past and where I just need to, where I feel like this is just too much, is, say, only bread and water for a day. Or no, you know, restricting of a specific food for an entire day or for 2 days or something. Those are where it gets problematic.
When you say problematic, what happens? And then as soon as you're free of that, you purge or binge?
Yes. Well, right. Yes.
Okay. Is that the only time you binge?
No. there's other times as well. There's other times.
Okay. Are you getting therapy?
I am. Yes. Yes. It's an ongoing, and it's hard.
Have you run this question by your therapist?
No, I haven't. This is something that's kind of popped up in my mind recently as I'm finding myself praying and lifting up intentions for a great deal more things, you know, kind of in my life, just with the current world situation, family life, things like that. So,
okay.
It's...
My guess would be your therapist, I don't know how much the therapist respects your worldview, but my guess would be the therapist would probably say, be careful about using food to fast, especially
right.
if you've had a history of impulsively reacting afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you can fast from a gazillion things.
Okay.
Okay. Anything that you find, there is a term that behaviorists use. It's called the PREMAC principle. The PREMAC principle basically says this: you will work for rewards that are high on your reward list. So, for example, let's do a little twist on that. Let's say that you find that you spend 1.26 hours per day on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And that is at the apex of your preferred activities. Fasting from that, for you, might be a whole lot harder than going on bread and water.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
it's good for you. It's real good for you. Think about this, too. In the history of fasting, most people did not have the opportunities and the options that we have. for heaven's sakes, if they fasted from mm-hmm. food, that was a pretty big sacrifice.
Yeah.
For us, okay, well, yeah, we'll fast a little bit, but I can distract myself with all kinds of other things, other activities, other pleasures, other pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of things you could say to yourself, yeah, I could do that, okay. But hopefully, I don't want to step too far into this because I know you're seeing a therapist, and I don't want to in any way step into the turf where you and your therapist are working
on. Right. Well, this has helped tremendously. And what was that, the pre-what principle?
PREMAC. P-R-E-M-A-C-K, the PREMAC principle.
PREMAC principle.
People
okay,
will work
up.
For
Thank
higher
you.
Rewards. See, I get to throw things like that around so people think. People will say this to me all the time. They go, I can do your show. I go, really?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they always say that. They do that. I can do your show. I know what you're going to say. I can do your show. Okay. All right. So every once in a while, I have to throw around a term like that. So they go, oh, I didn't know what that meant.
No, I never heard of it, so thank you.
Thank you, Tori. I'll talk to you.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, honey. Bye. All right, we're going to get some calls up there. Patiently waiting, folks. So, you know, it's interesting because we had Jack called from Duluth, Minnesota, and he was asking about how to deal with hazing as an outsider, which is an interesting question. And I thought about going to Jack after a call I was on, but he disappeared. This happens a lot. I think there's something about thinking about where I'm going to go on the next call, the people sense it, and they just go, oh, I'm getting nervous. I'm going to go away. I'm Dr. Ray.
You're listening to The Doctor. Come in. Pull up a couch. Let's talk. The doctor is in.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The Archbishop of Detroit, Alan Vigneron, published a little booklet called The Beauty of Truth, and it deals with this very question of words and the use of words. And it's a great sorrow, the Archbishop points out, when the quantity of words being expressed is at an all-time high, and the consequences of ill-used words are causing more harm to the cause of truth and the good of the human soul than maybe ever before. Are we part, as they say, are we part of the problem or are we part of the solution? Are we constantly carping about society, church, media, police? Because if so, we're gonna have to go out of our way to demonstrate this kind of patience with one another, to let people think through things rather than, you know, immediately slam them with, I've got the answer for you, buddy. Words matter.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
Go to Kay from Minnesota because there is a time limit on this particular problem, and the variables in the problem could be many. Narrowing it down would help a lot, but Kay has a 5-year-old granddaughter, obviously, whose mother and or father do not listen to this program because they would have called, not Kay. But Kay says, that's all right. I will step in. I will be a vicarious substitute. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Thank you for the call. So this granddaughter is 5 years old, not potty trained, number one or number two or both?
Both.
Both. Erratic, irregular, not at all, or here, there?
Well, I don't know. I guess they kind of think she's trained because she is does go into the bathroom independently. The pull-ups are in there. She puts the pull-up on, does her thing, and then comes back out, puts the pull-up in the garbage, and comes back out. Unless it's number two, then her mother needs to help her clean up a little bit and then go on her way.
Have they checked everything out physically?
Yeah, as far as I know, they are, you know, she has brought it up to her pediatrician a number of times. And the pediatrician says to just ignore it, and before you know, it'll take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. So a child who would be trained by age three is now five, and ignoring it is not working.
Correct.
And ignoring it doesn't work. This is the old, when they're ready, they will. Well, yes, there are those children who do that. They're probably the minority. Your daughter, your granddaughter, is not. You've kind of answered the question, Kay. The question is, they're not doing anything about it. So as long as they're not doing anything about it, she's taking the path of least resistance, and she goes in up to a point. Does not follow through on the potty, and then just throws the pull-ups away. And then they kind of bribe her with M&Ms and whatever else they can use, and she's just looking at them like, I'm not into this. Does that kind of summarize
it? Really, yeah. I don't know that they give her any M&Ms or anything anymore. They just kind of just figure, well, that's her procedure, and they move on. She's the oldest of three. Mm-hmm. And she has a three-year-old sister and a two-year-old sister that are both trained.
Well, apparently, they haven't asked you for your advice.
No, they have not. And I, you know, it's no.
Let it go.
Okay.
They're going to get tired of this.
I didn't know if you had.
Oh, I do. I have all kinds of suggestions. Of course.
Oh.
But they didn't ask you, right?
She has expressed her frustrations and talked about thinking that it's...
Does she want to do anything about it?
...gone too far. Oh, I think so. I think that they feel as though since they've consulted with the pediatrician, and that's what the pediatrician said, so that's what they're following. But I'm thinking myself that they could maybe find another way to take care of the
clean
problem.
This mess up.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Well, there are ways, and there are certainly ways, and there are things that I suggest that usually take care of it in a week or two. The problem you have right now is that they're following the pediatrician's advice because they think the pediatrician knows exactly what to do in these situations. Unfortunately, when they go back to the pediatrician, it would be wise for them to say, well, we tried ignoring it, and we've been ignoring it for 2 years, and it's not any better.
Right.
Then what would the pediatrician say?
Right.
Keep ignoring it. Kindergarten's coming up.
Yeah. That's what she's been saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, very simply, one thing they could do is they could tell their little daughter that you are smart enough, you know, to go into the potty, and we need to see that you went on the potty. And if you don't, if you go in the pull-ups and you dump them, until you go back on the potty again to show us that you're going to go in the potty, you have no privileges. You don't have anything.
Yeah.
You will have nothing. So let us know when you're ready to go back to get all your privileges back. And that's what will happen. That's very easy. It's very simple. You don't have to worry about it. If they did that, I would be very, very confident that things would clean up and smell better. I think.
Okay.
All right, sweetheart. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
You know why potty training bugs people? Well, first of all, it's got this reverberating Freudian smell to it. Because Freud was real big on this stuff, and he made it sound like if you didn't handle it well, your kid's going to have all kinds of adult psyche percolating issues. But the other thing is, it's a recurrent thing. Anything that is a recurrent discipline issue can lead to bad habits. Pediatrician, in my opinion, gave him some misguided advice. Those of you who didn't get on, please call back. Please call back. You'll be first up. I thank you for keeping me company. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. It's your eternal walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.